B'tikvatam b'chol dor v'dor, and their hope in every generation. Lehodia shakol kovecha lo yevoshu, to show, to declare that all who hope to you will never be ashamed. Lo yikamu lenetzach kol chosin bach. Lehodia. No, I'm not going to do that again right now. But to show that all who take shelter in you will never be humiliated. Beautiful words, but if you think again about them, they're a bit tricky. Let's focus on that for a second, okay? So the first part, let's focus on the first line of this song for just a minute. If you look in source number two, the first line of the song clearly borrows from the verse that I have in source number two from Parachat Pasuk Tedva, which is as follows. U'mordechai etzam l'chnei ha-melech. This is after the salvation of Purim. Everything is good. And Mordechai goes out in front of the king, lavush malchut techilat v'chor, and he's wearing robes of blue and white, royal robes of blue and white. Techilat is here translated as blue. Va'ateret zahav, with a magnificent crown of gold, gedola, v'tachrich butz v'argaman, and the mantle of fine linen and purple wool. Va'ir Shushan sahala v'samecha, and the city of Shushan rang with joyous cries. So clearly, Shoshanat Yaakov Tzahala V'samecha, the rose of Yaakov, referring to Bnei Yisrael, is a play on the words Va'ir Shushan Tzahala V'samecha. Okay. So that's the first line of the song. But what about the second line? Ber'otam Yacha Techelet Mordechai. When they saw the Mordechai's Techelet. Quick question for those who are still following along with me. How many things was Mordechai wearing? Or what was Mordechai wearing when he went in front of the king? What does Mordechai have on in source number two? Was it just the chelet? What else does he have on? Right? It says Mordechai left the king's presence, and what's he wearing? So I say again?
Gold.
Gold, royal robes. All sorts of things, right? He's wearing a lot. It's interesting, specifically, that when were they happy? They were happy when they saw Mordechai's Techelet. Techelet Mordechai. And I think the first question is, what is it about this Techelet? Of all the things that Mordechai was wearing, right? There's a very beautiful, vivid imagery. A golden crown, robes, fine linen and purple wool. When the Jewish people saw Mordechai's Techelet, that's when they were happy. And I want to know why. Why the Techelet? Okay. But moving on to the second word, the second verse over here. And for those who want to participate, if you could help me out a bit, okay? So the word, we say, Shu'atam hayita lanetzach. Shu'atam means their salvation. Hayita means you were their salvation. If Hashem was their salvation, when did that happen? When is this referring to? When was Hashem their salvation? In this song, we sing after the Megillah. When is Hashem their salvation? Clearly, during the Purim story, right? As Jeff was about to say. Sorry, I jumped the gun there. During the Purim story. That's what it's talking about. Shu'atam hayita. What's the next word? Lanetzach. You were their salvation forever. How does that sentence even make any sense? How can you be someone's salvation in the past forever, for eternity, for the future? You were their salvation forever. B'tikvatam b'chol dor v'dor. In what sense was God their salvation forever? What is that referring to? So these are the two questions I want to study with you and consider with you tonight.
Can I just ask something?
Yes, please.
Is it Netzach victory?
So Netzach can mean victory. It can mean victory. But I think based on the next line, so thank you for sharing. I think based on the next line, B'tikvatam b'chol dor v'dor, right? And their hope for every generation, it seems to me then that Netzach in this context means forever. I think based on that sort of parallelism between those two phrases, but it could mean Netzach also means to be victorious, to win. There's a relation between being victorious and a sort of eternity. But I do think in this context it means forever. And I'd like to consider that.
The victory was forever.
The victory was forever. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, so the victory was forever. Was it really forever? Was it? Is that true? So the Jews at the Purim leave, you know, we eventually, whether when it exactly happens, it's interesting, but we build the second temple. That's destroyed, right? Like, so that didn't last forever. In fact, the Megillah itself says, that the reason we don't say Hala on Purim is because we were still slaves to Achashverosh. So what victory lasted forever? That's what I ask you. What was forever? What exactly lasted forever? Where is the tikvatam b'chol dar v'dar?
Continuation of the Jewish people.
The very continuation of Jewish people. This is that Haman attempted to wipe out all the Jewish people. And by the very fact, by dint of the fact that we continue to exist, that's part of the, so that's an eternal victory. That's a beautiful idea. I want to expand upon that. But I want to expand upon that. Yes, he tried to kill us and he didn't. Right? That's true. That happens a lot, though. And he could have tried to kill us again, and they did try to kill us again. And they didn't. But were those also forever? There's something about Purim specifically that's forever, I think, being expressed in this specific line. But thank you for that. I 100% agree. So I want to share a few insights on the Gila itself, and then I want to go back to this Piyut and hopefully, again, explain why Techeles specifically and the nature of the eternity of the victory of Purim. So let's take a look at source number three. Source number three is probably the climax of the Megillah, right? So picture the scene. So you have Esther and Mordechai. Mordechai learns of Haman's evil decree. Mordechai goes and contacts Esther, the queen in the palace. He tells Esther to go into Achashverosh's palace and beseech him for mercy for the entirety of the Jewish people. Esther is a bit squeamish about this. And she says, you know, everybody knows, everyone in the whole country, everyone knows that if you go into the king's royal chamber without being called, and he doesn't lift the golden scepter, what happens? Of course, bad. Bad news. Don't do it. And I haven't been called for 30 days. This is what she tells Mordechai. Mordechai responds to Esther as follows, source number three. Vayomer Mordechai lahashiv el Esther. Mordechai said to respond to Esther, Altada mi b'nafsheich lahi malei beit ha-melech mikol Yehudim. Do not imagine that you of all the Jews will escape with your life by being in the king's palace. Ki machareish hacharishi b'eit hazot. For if you are silent at this time, you know what? There will be a salvation. There will be a relief for the Jews from another place. And you on your and your father's household will be lost. Who knows? Maybe it was for this moment in time that you reached, that you achieved the crown. Maybe this is why you rose to prominence. So Mordechai tells Esther, look, you got to go in right now or you're done and we're going to be saved anyway. Simple question for you, or two questions. One, how does Mordechai know this? In what way is Mordechai privy to this information? He's in some sort of prophet. How does he know that they're going to be saved another way? Like, it seems pretty bad. Haman wants to kill all the Jews. Achashverosh seems fine with it. And even if he does know that, let's say he has this confidence in Hashem saving the Jewish people, and I think he does, well, how does he know Esther is going to be lost? Why should Esther be lost? She's a queen. You know, she seems pretty powerful to me. Seems like a tzaddikah, righteous woman. Why does Mordechai say you're going to be lost if you don't act right now? And you, Esther, didn't you make a good point? Hey, Mordechai, he hasn't called me for 30 days. You never know. He'll probably call me soon. Maybe tomorrow. Why risk my life to go right now? So how does Mordechai know this? It's quite perplexing. So there's a beautiful insight by the Malbim, Rameir Levush bin Yechiel Mechor Weiser, that he on this pasuk that he really brings to life a very important idea. And he says as follows. Take a look at source number 4. The Rambam says that, look, there's this conflict, and this is where I have faith in the divine plan. There's this conflict here, I think, right? On the one end, Hashem gives us all free will. Hashem gives us the opportunity to choose how we live our lives and what we do. But on the other hand, Hashem's not going to just leave everything to one person. Hashem's not going to leave the fate of the entire Jewish people to one person. Because Hashem has a divine plan. There is a destiny here. There is an ultimate goal. History is moving forward. And the ultimate salvation of the Jewish people has to happen. Hashem's not going to leave that to chance. And therefore, in source number 4, the Malbim says as follows. Al-Pizot, Chavala Esther Das. Therefore, Mordechai voiced his wisdom to Esther. Since her whole status of being in the palace wasn't for herself or for the Jewish people, right? He's saying, look, Esther, let's think about this for a second, okay? How all of a sudden you came from being this orphan to all of a sudden becoming the queen of the entire kingdom? That doesn't happen by chance. That didn't just happen. So that can't be just because of you. It's clearly because the Jewish people are in danger and you're here to save them. Rav Karcha says the Malbim, continuing, that God must have prepared other causes of redemption, distant causes that we can't see right now, such that even if Esther sins, and she refuses to save Hashem's nation, so still yati lema deisibrachiru. He'll still save them some other way. Like, Esther, you know, you're really important, but God didn't just think, you know, I'm going to let Esther save the Jews. And if not, no, so we'll get a new Klal Yisrael. New, let's move on to the next nation. There's no way. God's not leaving this all in your hands. Memeil tzarech lalasho, therefore she had to think. Ki mitziyuta b'dula kvavod hurab avor shia yada hatzola b'esa hi hangmovo shiata. It has to be that the reason that you are in power is for the moment right now, this moment in time, to bring the salvation. If you don't rise to the occasion and garner the strength to save the Jewish people, either way, they will be saved from another source. Hashem's not going to leave the entire fate of his people in the hand of one person. And there must be other sources. And once it's time for the other sources, then Hashem doesn't need you anymore. Then your whole purpose is no longer necessary. And then you and the house of your father is going to be lost. So it's really an amazing explanation of the Malbim. And it's really quite gripping to think of that challenge that Mordechai poses to Esther and how maybe each of us might have a time in our life where we have to step up to the plate, where Hashem is relying on us to do something that and it's only one moment that we have to do it. But I want to focus on something else for a second. The confidence of Mordechai that despite the fact that he put on sackcloth and he was screaming in the street and the Jewish people were already mourning, Mordechai is positive that the Jewish people are going to be saved. It's going to happen in some way. The question is, how? Now, this message of that God, even though there's this paradox where it sounds like in this world, we have the power, we have the ability to choose what we want to do, and we also seem to have some sort of control over the world around us, and specifically the monarchy has control over the country that they rule over. But on a deeper level, we know that it's not necessarily so. That on a deeper level, we know that somehow God is pulling the strings and it's going to end the way he wants it to. I think is maybe the most important theme of the Megillah. And I'd like to bring this out through, I think, the most perplexing verse in the entire story. Take a look at source number 5. In source number 5, we have the very, very end of the Megillah, the end of chapter 9. And this is where the Megillah sort of wraps the whole story up. But it does it in the most general, non-specific way. It's almost impossible to figure out what exactly the Megillah is getting at. It says as follows. Actually, we'll read the English for a bit short on time. I don't have it all of it there, here, though. I apologize for that. So Haman, the Agagi, the enemy of all the Jews, had a thought about the Jews to eradicate them. And therefore, he cast a lot, which was this Goralis lottery, to annihilate them and eradicate them. Or to confuse them and eradicate them. When she came in front of the king, Amar in Masefer, she said with the book, what book, who said, not 100% clear, but okay. Well, let's say it's Achashverosh, by decree, written decree said, Asher Yeshu Mashav Tohar Asher Chashav Adim Arosha, that his evil thought that he thought about the Yudim should be returned on his head. And therefore they hung Haman and his children on the tree. And here we go. Therefore they called these days Purim, because of the poor. And therefore, upon all the words of this letter, and what they saw about this, and what happened to them. I'll read you JPS's translation here again, and of what they had experienced in that matter, and what had befallen them. Now, if you wrote that on an English essay, you would definitely get an F. What in the world does this mean? What they saw about this and what happened to them. What does this mean and why is the Megillah being so general? If you look at source number 6, the Gemara and Megillah uses this verse in the Megillah to determine when you need to begin the Megillah. There's a debate in the Talmud as to whether or not you need to read the entire Megillah to fulfill your obligation. And there are different opinions about what is absolutely necessary to read from the Megillah. And the Gemara says that all of these relate to this pasuk. It goes as follows. Rav Huna said that they derive their opinions about what you need to read from Megillah from here. And the Gemara sees these words as a reference to a number of different schemes that people had for a number of different motivations, and what actually happens to them is exact, not at all what they planned. So let's take a few examples. Mada Amar Kula, the first opinion, the one who says you have to read the whole Megillah. Ma Ra'a, what did Achashverosh see? Shnish Tamish Bekilim Shabeir HaMikdash, to use the vessels of the temple after he had destroyed that, after it was destroyed in his party. Why to use the vessels of the temple? Al Kacha, this is why. Because he calculated 70 years and the Jews weren't redeemed. That's it. Kaput. The Jews are never going to be redeemed. And he celebrated by using the Kim of the temple. What happened instead? Katal Vashti. He ends up killing Vashti. One more example. Manda Amar Meshudi. There's another opinion that says you read from the Megillah where it begins Mordechai's story. Ishihudi. Ma Ra'a Mordechai de Ikni Bahaman. Why was Mordechai jealous of Haman, or zealous about Haman? Al-Kacha, this is why. The Shabi Nashi of Rezara, because he made himself an idol, and he didn't want to bow down. Umay Gialehan, what happened? It Rachesh Nisa. Now the Gemara gives four different opinions, and I could ask you which one's right. What Ma Ra'u Al-Kacha Umay Gialehan is it really referring to? And I think the answer, although there are different opinions, the Gemara is pretty clear. It's referring to all of them. It's referring to every single one. Because the point of this general verse in the Megillah is that life in our lives, in the world, is a series of umara'u al-kachas, umahi gia alehems. That there are constantly people who have motivations to do something, who are inspired to do something for whatever personal motivations they might have, but what actually ends up happening ties into Hashem's ultimate divine plan. And that's what the story of Megillah is all really about. And I'd like to share some sources now, bring this all back together with you. And before I get to some of the more Hasidic sources, let me share with you a Rambam in source number 7. You know, because not everyone's so into Hasidus. So let's read a Rambam here. This is the Rambam at the end of his short list of commandments. The Rambam counts all 613 mitzvot. At the end of this list of commandments, the Rambam talks about the issue of rabbinic enactments. And he says, don't think when the rabbis made their own mitzvot that they were violating adding mitzvot to the Torah. because they weren't. They didn't. It would be violating the prohibition of adding to the Torah if the rabbis thought that their words had the same caliber as the Torah law. But they don't. The rabbis don't think that. They think that they're making their rabbinic law. In that context, the Rambam talks about the Mikra Megillah. And this is how he describes the goal behind Mikra Megillah. Just for time's sake, we'll go to the bold. He talks about praising Hashem for what he did to us. And then he says, Kidei lehodia, which I always sing when I read this Rambam, Kidei lehodia ledaron habaim, to tell the future generations, She'emet ma she'atichanu ba'torah ki mi gaygado asher lo lokim krovei me'lav, ka'ashem lokeinu b'chol kareinu me'lav, that when the Torah promised that it's truthful when the Torah promised that we have a God who we can always call to. That the message of the Megillah is that no matter how dire the circumstances seem, and no matter how low we sink as a Jewish people, that no matter what, we can always call to God. That is the message of the Megillah. So now let's bring it back to our song, and then I think it will become clear. Why Techeles? This was the question we asked. Mordechai wore a number of different things. Why Techeles? So if you look in the Medrash in source number 8, I won't read it inside, but I'll tell you what it says. The Medrash basically asks that on our tzitzit, there is a divine law that when you wear tzitzit, you're supposed to add a string that is dyed with techelet. Techelet dyed. Why techelet? Well, here's what the Medrash says. Because techelet looks like grass. And the grass looks like the sea. And the sea looks like the sky. And the sky looks like the rainbow. And the rainbow looks like a cloud. And the cloud looks like the throne. And the throne looks like kavod. Hashem's divine honor, the Shekhinah. And so Hashem wanted you to experience this and remember the Shekhinah, and therefore he told you to wear Techeles. Simple question here, right? Isn't it a bit indirect, right? Like, okay, so if you want me to remember the Kavod, or at least the sky, let me wear something that looks like the sky. Why have me look at something that looks like the grass, which then looks like something else, and then ultimately I get to the Kisya Kavod. But Techeles is about seeing beyond what's immediately in front of you. And that's the point here. Techeles means connecting dots. Techeles means looking at this, sort of looks like that, the grass, and if I look carefully at the grass and use my vision, I ultimately can connect to the Kisei HaKavod. It's about seeing beyond what is immediately in front of you. And so when the Jewish people saw Yaha, they saw everything together, both together as a people, but how all the events aligned together, and they saw Mordechai's Techeles, then they were filled with joy. And this is the eternal salvation of Purim. Sfas Emes described in source number 9, that the message of Purim is that Hashem always in some way has a salvation. And that not necessarily because we're so wonderful. It's not necessarily because we're so great. In Purim, we weren't that great. The people of Shushan weren't that great. And yet Hashem saves us anyway. And he showed that no matter what happens, no matter what level we sink to, no matter how dire the threat is, he will always be there to save us because of our connection with him. And it's Shuatam Hayita Lenetzach. You were our salvation forever. And he actually says something very inspiring. I know I'm running out of time here, but which is that just as we can connect to God on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur Kippurim, through Enoi, through affliction, through fasting and limiting our bodily intake, we can also connect to Hashem in the same way, rise to this higher level through feasting and happiness and contemplating this notion. And Rav Simcha Mordechai Ziskin, the altar of Kalm, serves in this last source, that based on this message that Hashem is always there for the Jewish people, that that we can always rely on him, that we will never be embarrassed or humiliated for doing so, that is the eternal message on Purim. And maybe we can sing Shoshana Yaakov every day, because it's not just about him. Now, he wasn't the rabbi of a shul, and if he did that every day, davening would take a bit of a long time. But the message is there. And I leave you with the following. There are difficult times in life, as we're remembering today. Life is not always so easy. It's difficult. And it's hard to see God sometimes. But Purim's about celebrating anyway. Purim's about trying to find, to see beyond, to say that, at least to have the faith, to be tough on that. I don't know how, but somehow God is going to be there. And there is going to be Yeshua, and he's going to bring us to salvation. And I hope that it happens soon. And I hope it happens soon through this Sara as well. And I hope we can all soon celebrate prayer and joyously together. Thank you very much for listening. And the Neshama should have an aliyah.
Yisher koach.